You know, how much of that comes right out of the listening public?
How do they get feedback from the listening public? It's a national survey type.
From the, yeah, a substantial part of it comes from the listening public. A good amount of it is done by in-person kinds of research and also by phone kinds of research, which are conducted directly by the consulting organization, and also by feedback which is received by the various album radio stations across the country, which also have the same format.
Can I follow up on that?
Sure.
One of the things that always seemed worrisome to me by an agency that programs for so many markets around the country and probably for quite a number of very popular and powerful stations, the situation is absolutely ripe for abuse. I mean, people who program air radio are constantly being lobbied by the record industry, by the music industry, by entertainers, this, that, and the other thing. They may have a good handle on what people want and are therefore making some sort of attempt to give people what they want. At the same time, they can't help but be lobbied, and the best lobbyists, therefore, I'm not even talking about anything improper, but the best lobbyists, therefore, have the best opportunity to hit 39 or 40 markets around the country. Isn't that worrisome at a certain point?
I think I'd have to answer it from this perspective. I think it's more worrisome when you have less sources of input, in a way. For example, if we were relying solely on our own judgment, and this is possible, and many stations do, then we only have ourselves being lobbied more directly by all of the local record people. And certainly there are good record people in this market as well as in other markets. They keep us abreast of the very latest records. I think it's more difficult to get some kind of a unified lobbying thing going if you've got to enlist 30 or 40 or 50 markets in order to affect the success of one particular album. The kinds of research that we do and that are done by the people we're associated with are not done by polling the various record representatives, because we get that, excuse me, we get that that response and that input constantly, you know, and immediately when the album has been released. But I think it would be more difficult, Bill, because it would be easier to abuse the less people that you have to work through. This thing gets so dispersed.
That's exactly what I'm saying, though. With one organization operating out of Atlanta being the programmer or a significant portion of the programming for a lot of stations, that substantially decreases the number of people that have to be lobbied.
All right, but you have to understand.
And they're well removed from the awareness of, for instance, you and the other people here. When
right.
You're being lobbied directly, as you were 2 years ago, you knew who was coming at you, who they were, what their motivations were. You don't know all the input that's going into this national programmer
right.
all the time.
But we do know the input that we can also support that with in terms of input that we can get from the local market. You also have to have a certain amount of astute judgment on your own part to be able to know that if you listen to a piece of music, that you can tell intrinsically if there's a bona fide basis for that being popular. If the Abrams people were to tell us that Johnny Horton and the Killer Bees is a big album release, and we listen to it, and we could say that that the Killer Bees may be great on Saturday Night Live, but they haven't got it together yet as an act musically. You know, there's a certain amount of our own judgment that is in it, and I do repeat that we always take precedence in terms of the final decision of what's put on the station or not put on the station. And it's also unlike a syndicated tape service where tapes are sent to the radio station and that's it. You take the tapes more or less in the order that they come. You jump from this tape to that tape, or you take one tape and play it all the way through. But in this case, it's a live, viable, working relationship. And there's potential for what you say with any relationship in any organization. I don't believe it exists, and I certainly hope that it doesn't exist in this particular situation.
All right. I hope someday that Smith or Abrams or Burkhart, is that the other guy?
Lee Abrams.
Someday can come and be on the program and explain to people how they operate nationally.
I think it'd be
good information about the industry.
I think if Lee Abrams were available and we could arrange to have him appear on one of these programs, that it would be an extremely interesting program, because he is a young, knowledgeable, very much musically involved radio programmer who's had a great deal of experience himself in major markets, working as an announcer, working as a music director, working as a programmer. And his ideas do work in terms of having the pulse on what significant numbers of people in the various radio listening audiences in the markets that he's consulting in like to hear.
And in the music industry in general. Listen, I'm going to thank this listener for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Good night. And thank you for waiting. Go ahead, you're on KQ Scope.
Yes, I've listened to KQ for at least the last 5-6 years. I was wondering if I'd like to record a lot of your Midnight Album Hours and stuff like that, but since I work in the morning, I can't record it. Is there any way you can get that done more during the day and at a time where I could do it or other people could do it?
Only suggestion I can make to you is that when we have a sidetrack Sunday, that would be an opportune time for you to do it. The reason the Midnight Album Hour is at midnight is this. If we have a really strong album that we know is going to be very popular, that album could probably be played from beginning to end at any time of the day, and it would be a tune-in factor. But if we have an album that is not a strong and viable and popular album, it could be a tune-out factor. It's sometimes very difficult to determine the distinction on that. But midnight is a time period in which we can feature not just the biggest albums, not just the superstars in the music industry, but some of the other album artists as well, and play it through. So I guess my answer is that in order to be able to hear a variety of albums, the concession, and to play them and to make them available to you, the concession that we have to make to our own ratings objectives is that they be played at midnight.
Okay, one more question. I noticed that, like, when Moody Blues came to town for their concert, that for a month before they came, we hardly heard Moody Blues. But 2-3 days before they came, that's all you heard was Moody Blues. By the time they got here, I really didn't want to go to the concert. You just make it so that, you know, people don't want to go.
Well, apparently a lot of people didn't agree with you, because my understanding is that the Moody Blues concert was very well attended. There's a certain amount of interest and tension, I suppose, in terms of people who enjoy a particular artist who's coming into town. A certain amount of anticipation that comes from knowing that they're going to be here next week. And the radio station, I guess any radio station, really would like to be a part of that anticipation. And we have not had frequent complaints of of the kind that you have feelings about now. And I guess that I'd have to say, based on attendance at concerts, my feeling is that it's very possible that just the reverse happens, that because people are aware that, of course, if a concert is sold out, then it's really a moot point, but that people are aware, and more aware, that an artist is coming, and I think that it tends to help heighten the anticipation for a particular artist.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
How about complaints from the other direction, that might be improper to sort of informally assist a promoter in a particular group he's bringing to town by specially programming that artist?
The definition of what you're talking about, the impropriety of payola, I have to interpret as if it were being done for one particular promoter consistently, or if it were being done for one particular artist and had not been done by others, or if it were being done in exchange for something either over the counter or under the counter, that the radio station had agreed to do in exchange for playing that artist in greater rotation. And this is not the case. And so, therefore, I don't see the impropriety in it. I actually see the propriety of being on top of what's happening musically in town, and it's the strength of many radio stations that they are aware and participating and anticipating what's coming up in concerts.
All right, well, and I think it's a strength of KQ that the announcers, a few times every day, say, I forget exactly, I should know, I've heard it so many times. What is it they say? Some of the stuff given away is in exchange for promotional consideration.
Right.
I think that's an especially honest thing to tell people. What does it mean?
It means that the albums that we might be giving away, a trip, which we might be giving as a recent one for people sending in postcards to the Volunteer Jam for a winner for that. and other periodic promotions that we have, which are tied in with record companies, that in fact that prize has been supplied to the radio station by the record company in exchange for our announcing it on the air. This is the way it works for us. This is the way it works for everybody else. But since we got into the contest arena a little late, as it were, we decided two things. One was to keep them relatively intelligent, to avoid the kinds of contests that are really presented in a way that's more exciting than the contest itself, to keep it low-key, to keep it unobtrusive, to keep it somewhat in touch with what our roots had been. And the second thing was that we would be upfront about it and making people aware of the fact that this was not just something that KQ was doing on its own. We were making this available, that we are participating with other people in a joint promotional venture.
All right. So when you hear it, that's what it means. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead. You're on KQ Scope.
Yes. In relation to the idea of services for the people, I'm wondering about your SCA, your subcarrier. Do you have anything that's filling all of that bandwidth right now?
Yeah,
George. George Wuerl, Chief Engineer.
Right now, we do have an SCA on, 67 KC SCA. It is carrying the Physicians Network, which is a private service, and we simply carry it. Numbers of doctors around the Twin Cities areas have these special SCA receivers on, and it's carried from New York City, so we really don't do very much with it, except make sure that it's on and make sure that the quality is there. But the SCA program content is a more or less a private service, and I've listened to it a little bit just to do some quality checks, and it carries direct to the doctor's office the American Medical Journal, I suppose, of what's happening, you know, in terms of new drugs and new operations and so on.
Right.
And that's, I guess, totally really public service.
Right. And related to this, are you... Do you own, or do any of you own, a personal computer?
Personally, I'm thinking of it. Nobody here at present does.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason I ask is because there is a thing called the DigiCast Project, which is in existence now, and that is a West Coast started project to have certain FM stations broadcast news, classified ads, whatever, services for people. Eventually, this could be turned into an encrypted mail service, and in your case, you might even think of digital music being presented over the subcarrier. Now, have any of you people been discussing these kind of ideas?
Well, in what I have read in broadcast journals, it is right now only in the experimental stage. There are various licensed uses for what you can do with a subcarrier. You can use it as a return line.
This is all legal, by the way.
Well, I haven't read anything that the FCC has passed it for general use.
It is. Thing that is being done is people are developing a small handheld-type units that can be take the subcarrier and convert the signals over to be viewed on your television.
Oh, yeah, I'm familiar with that system, and that system is in use. What you're talking about in terms of almost a dedicated message transmission system with a home personal computer, this gets into the realm of a directed message where we're essentially a common carrier. We're not licensed to be a common carrier.
Mm-hmm.
We're not a telephone company or a telegraph company. We could broadcast, and that's the term that we have to use here,
exactly.
Broadcast to the general public. And we can broadcast to a specific segment of the general public, such as doctors.
Right.
Or we can use the SCA to broadcast background music to a particular segment. Or we can use the FM subcarrier to broadcast, in what you're talking about, goes to a box on top of a TV set. And to someone who is hard of hearing, hearing impaired, it will give, on the bottom of the TV set, a running commentary of what's happening on that particular TV channel. Now, this is licensed. And it is in use around the country. But again, the key word is broadcast, not a specific dedicated message.
Right, I see. Okay, well, thanks.
And thank you for calling. I'm going to take this opportunity to remind people that at 11 and a half minutes after, or excuse me, after at 1/2 minute after 11 o'clock, you're listening to KQRS AM and FM in Golden Valley, Minnesota. This program is KQ Scope. public service listener call-in program. Tonight, my name is Bill Tilton. I host this program every once in a while, and I have two people with me this evening. Dick Poe, who's the station manager here at KQRS, and George Wuerl, who is our new chief engineer. We're discussing station policy and engineering particulars here at KQRS. We'll be on the air for another half an hour. Your comments and questions are welcomed. Our phone number is 545-5601. There are no open lines right now. Hopefully we will be able to deal with 15 or so more people yet this evening. As long as we got you on the box here, George, let me ask a couple of technical questions that some people might be interested in, especially once we get up on top of the IDS tower. Are people going to have problems adjusting antennas, especially people who like to record, like to have perfect reception? Can you give a couple of hints along that line?
That all depends on where you happen to be. If you are familiar with the area, and I suppose I'm not really knowledgeable to talk about that since I've only been in Minnesota for the last 5 or 6 weeks. We're located very near the juncture of Highway 55 and Highway 100 in Golden Valley. We will be moving some 4 miles almost due east to the IDS tower. If you have a directional outside antenna and you have it pointed in the direction of Golden Valley, you may find, depending on where you are now, that this is 4FM, you may find that you may have to reorient it towards the IDS. You could find that you're 90 degrees off, which would be you'd essentially be pointed in the wrong direction. But for all intents and purposes, if you're going to be living around the immediate vicinity of us, I'd say 10, 12 miles in any direction from the IDS tower, you should have virtually no problem orienting or reorienting an antenna because the signal will be that strong. The other thing, remember, we're going to be increasing power, so no matter where you are, the signal is going to be stronger, except if you happen to be living across the street. And something that may influence some people, the reception due to the antenna structure that we're putting up on top of IDS. In your car, the signal is going to be a lot better all over town. And for people I've talked to, that's the one of the things that a lot of people right now have comments and complaints about. So when IDS is operational, look for improvements no matter where you are. In terms of an antenna, generally just an indoor dipole will suffice. Of course, a dipole is directional. You would want to try and orient it so that the flat side of it faces the IDS tower. But again, I don't think that it's going to cause a whole lot of problems because we'll be stronger everywhere.
George, I just want to mention, Bill, that he may want to detail the other FM stations which are going to be joining us with their FM facilities on IDS, too.
I think you mentioned them earlier. What are those stations?
Well, again, 5 stations will be on top of the IDS tower. Those of you who have looked up there have seen 2 skinny lines. The scaffolding now has all been removed. It's a little hard to see sometimes. The poles are painted sky blue, so they blend in with the sky depending on some lighting conditions. Sunrise and sunset is the best time to see them. Of course, one of the poles has a blinking strobe on the top to comply with FAA regulations, so hopefully an airplane doesn't run into the tower. But the 5 stations involved are us, KQRS-FM, the AM will remain where it is, WLOL-FM-100, KEEY-WAYL, and KDWB. And we will, like I said before, be sharing a community antenna system. There are some technical details on who's going to be on what tower and how many watts each person is going to feed. But essentially, if we look at both towers, both poles, as a complete system, all 5 stations will be all feeding into that system and will be somewhat interdependent on each other.
All right, I want to ask each of you one more question and we'll go back to phone calls. George, since people are going to be getting the station better on their FM car radios, some people complain when they're traveling fast on the highway that stations will fade in and out. They'll get like feedback or interference of some sort. Is that avoidable?
It sounds as if you're running a stick along a picket fence. And it's called picket fencing in some circles. What it has to do with is when you're driving along in your car, you're not only picking up the station directly, you're picking up reflections from water towers, large buildings, houses, whatever. And it's called multipath. As you drive along, the signal starts, you start picking up not only the primary signal, but you start picking up the reflected signals. And this is very, very close to what you see when an airplane flies over your house on the TV. You see the TV just break up. Why? Because you're picking up the signal directly from the TV station, and you're picking up a reflection from a moving aircraft. The same thing applies as if you are moving, and you're picking up a reflection from a stationary object. Still, the reflections are changing around. We should be able to minimize this with IDS because the transmitting antenna will be so high, it will look at a lot more of the countryside. Right now, some of the places where KQRS is listened to, we are relying on bounces to get where we're going.
Which is IDS, no good for FM.
Well, if you're stationary and nothing else in the world moves, it can be somewhat acceptable. But that's not the way the real world operates. So it will be better from IDS. Now, I'm not going to say, put myself on a limb and say that if you're in downtown St. Paul between two or three skyscrapers, that you're not going to get any multipath, because that's an impossible situation. Radio waves don't bend, at least at FM frequencies. So it's going to have to bounce to get down to you on the street. But it'll be a whole lot better situation than if we're starting at a lower power, as we are now, from a lower altitude, going through all the ground clutter of Minneapolis, and then trying to get into St. Paul. So this whole situation will improve, and I think it'll be very dramatic to every listener.
All right, one question for Dick Pohl, and then I'll go back to phone calls. I wish you'd talk more about commercial policy. You mentioned earlier in the program that there's a limit under what a lot of other stations do for the time spent per hour on commercials. I'm wondering if there are particular requirements or restrictions, things that can't be said in advertisements, whether it's words or subject matter of the ad, where most of them come from.
Generally, it's handled on a very individualistic basis. The you have to kind of go with established guidelines that you can either pick up on directly from things that have been put in black and white by the FCC, or things that you can interpret from past FCC decisions involving other radio stations in the past in innumerable other markets. The obvious thing are the obscenities, things like that. And so you have to, you know, you have to do it on an individualistic basis.